He's gone.
Ah, the aliens got him.
Hello and welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast 43. I'm your host for today, Ryan Price. With us on the phone is Mr. Mike Lanello, joining us from the planet Tatooine.
Of course, yes.
As it is the current Star Wars celebration in Orlando, Florida. And we also have our special guest on the line, all the way from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Todd Tomlinson.
Hey, guys.
So, Todd, you can go ahead, Mike, I guess, if you had something you want to say. I was just going to ask Todd to give us a little intro, tell us who he is and why we have him on the show today.
Yeah, no, let's go with that.
Ah, great. Well, thanks. I have been working with the web since the mid to late 1980s. I was with the National Science Foundation and worked for the Pittsburgh Supercomputing Center, where I was on the team that took DARPANET to NSFNET, which became the internet. So I've kind of been around the block since the early days and really got involved in the mid-1990s with Netscape, and just continued focusing my career on the web. And several years ago, bumped into Drupal back in the Drupal 4 days and started using it as a platform to teach web development. So I taught undergrad and graduate school classes on web design and web development, and I saw this platform Drupal, and I thought, hey, this is a great tool. Why don't I use it as a mechanism for teaching students? And then I started finding opportunities out in the market to take the platform out and build websites with it, and that's what I've been doing for the last several years is Drupal. What I tell people is I do Drupal 24/7, 365 days a year, so I eat, sleep, and drink this stuff. And a few months ago, I received a call from the folks at A-Press Publishing saying, hey, we'd like to do a book on beginning Drupal 7, and we understand you're one of the Drupal guys. Would you be interested in writing a book about it? And sitting around and talking to my clients over the last 3 or 4 years, one of the common questions that always comes up is, hey, where can I go and find a book that's geared towards somebody who's new to a CMS? You know, they don't understand what a CMS is and what it can do. They're new to Drupal, so they know what it is, sort of, but they don't know the ins and outs and how to use it. I've also talked to folks who have developed on other CMS platforms and are moving over to Drupal, so they were looking for a resource. And then when I hand a site over to my clients, even with all the training that I do, they still want to have something they can put in their hand that they feel comfortable with, that they know if they run into an issue or want to learn something new about Drupal, that they have a resource. And that's what the beginning Drupal 7 book became. So I started writing it at the end of last year, and we published it on June 30th. And it's been doing fairly well in the market, even though Drupal 7 hasn't hit the release date yet. We're still selling lots of copies of the book.
Yeah, that was a very brave move, you know, writing a Drupal 7 book. And you've probably been writing it for more than a few months, correct?
Yeah, I started in December, and things I thought were fairly stable in December, and things have changed a little bit over December through May. Yeah. So I had to make several revisions, but I think even in December, it wasn't stable enough for a production site, but there was still enough back then to actually start out writing the book. So a lot of it I wrote in January, February, and did some updates in March and April. So.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you about the book. You know, we could talk about the book in a few minutes, but I just want to mention that, you know, this book is aimed squarely at beginners. I mean, almost so much that people who have never even looked at Drupal before. And it's kind of funny because, on the other hand, you're also in the process of finishing up a book that could not be on the more opposite end of the spectrum in the Drupal universe. You're actually finishing up the third edition of Pro Drupal Development, correct?
I am. In fact, I'm on the last chapter.
Let me ask you real quick. How does it end? Spoiler alert.
it ends by the guy getting the girl. Dun, dun, so dun. They live happily ever after. And Luke Skywalker figures out who his dad really is. And it's not who all we think it is. It follows the same pattern that the second edition did. You know, what I like to tell people is that, you know, what changed in Drupal 7? Everything. So, and especially writing pro Drupal development, think about all the APIs and all the inner workings of Drupal. When I started writing it, I thought, well, this won't be too hard to do, until I started looking at, oh my gosh, everything changed. You know, you look at the database APIs, you look at, you know, field API. I mean, you look at all the things that have come out in Drupal 7, and basically everything's changed. So it was a little bit of a challenge to take the book that we all know and love, and you know, I have my copy sitting here on my desk of the second edition, and it's all worn and tattered, and trying not to change it so much that somebody who's grown up with the Pro Drupal development series, this won't look totally out of sorts from the previous two versions. But there's a lot of changes. So I've added some new content on some of the areas that are just new in Drupal 7. For example, the field API that I mentioned before, you know, didn't exist before. I've also put a chapter in about the simple test framework, you know, and how that's embedded in core now, and what that means to all of us that are out there developing Drupal sites. So that's the last chapter as it stands. But if there are any listeners out there that have any other suggestions, I'm always looking for new chapters to add to the book, and it's not too late to slip another chapter or two in. So if anybody has some suggestions, that would be great.
So I don't want to ask you too many questions about it, but, you know, because I think we're going to have you on, and, you know, as soon as you tell us the book is done and we can get our hands on a draft or something, we'll probably have you back on. But how much thicker is it going to be than the second edition? How many pages are we looking at?
So right now we're targeting 650 pages. I think we may be in the 600 to 700 page range. So it's a thick book. I mean, it's definitely going to take up some space on your desktop. But there's just so much. There's so much in Drupal. So trying to cut the number of pages down just wasn't something I was able to do. In fact, it's going to grow a little bit from the second edition, but all with good stuff.
So your day job is vice president of e-government solutions at ServerLogic. What exactly is ServerLogic, and what's your role?
So ServerLogic is a traditional IT consulting organization. So we do soup to nuts. So custom development, package implementation, managed services, all the standard stuff that a systems integrator consulting organization would do. My role is focused on the public sector and helping government agencies building high-end websites using Drupal as the underlying architecture. So all I do is Drupal. And I'm focused in higher education, and libraries are the two areas that keep me very, very busy. So out there doing some pretty amazing things with Drupal in the government sector.
Excellent, excellent. So, well, let's we jump right into our five news stories for the week. And for the first one, guess what it's going to be? It's going to be, let's talk about beginning Drupal 7. And, you know, and who it's aimed for and what they'll find. And you kind of already gave us the background of why you wrote the book and who it's aimed for. But tell us a little bit more about, you know, what users can expect or what people can expect when they crack it open and kind of where does it start and what's the progression?
Sure. Yeah. So the book starts out with assuming that you don't have a Drupal installation. So I go through, and this is actually in the appendix, how do you install Drupal from scratch, and how do I install Drupal from scratch on my laptop or on my desktop, or if I have a hosting account with a hosting provider, how do I install it on a hosting solution? So I go through that process, and then I basically walk you through step by step of how to create a Drupal website, covering all the major topic areas like how do I install a module, how do I install a theme, how do I create users, how do I create menus, what's taxonomy, how do I use taxonomy, why is it important. I go over blocks and creating custom content types. And then I cover the what I always call the Holy Trinity So I do cover CCK as it exists in core, as well as still the contributed part of CCK that didn't make it into core. But I also cover panels and views. So all the sites that I develop, I always use panels and views. I do a little bit on theming, and then a couple of specialty areas that I think address some of the areas where folks may be trying to build websites around, and that is e-commerce. So I have a chapter on using UberCart. So I walk through installing e-commerce and setting up an UberCart site, and also social networking. Everywhere I go and everywhere I turn around, even in government, I hear people talking about social networking. So I talk about, you know, how to use Drupal as a social networking platform, and what are some of the modules that you could use to enable social network in a social networking in a on a Drupal site. And then I wrap up with how do I administer a site? So I have a Drupal site up and running. How do I administer it? And then followed with a case study. So one of the things that I've heard from readers is that they really like the case study. So I take you from the inception of thinking about what the site is going to do. So how do you, what's the methodology that you'd use to build a Drupal site? And then I walk you through step-by-step of building a Drupal site for a nonprofit. And go through several examples of how you would use Drupal to address certain functional requirements.
So you said that, you know, you wrote the book thinking about, you know, your clients who didn't have something that you could hand them, and, you know, kind of a user's guide for their new site. Now that you've finished the book and you've, I assume, have been able to give it to your clients, has it fulfilled that mission? Is it something that they can pick up, and after you launch a site and kind of give them a walkthrough, they can open up your book and like kind of get the background behind the taxonomy system, then look at their site and how taxonomy is set up and kind of see it one-to-one?
It has, and the way I've measured that is the number of phone calls that I get from my clients. And for those clients that I've given the book and said, please read this, the number of phone calls from those folks has gone down significantly. So
right. And it's funny because looking at the chapter outline of the book, you know, the first five or six chapters are really, like you said, the building blocks, you know, content, users, taxonomy, menus.
Right.
And then you kind of, the next few chapters kind of build upon all that, you know, a little bit of theming and then managing blocks and downloading modules. And then you really start getting into things that can very easily be each chapter can be a book on its own, you know, where you're talking about, you know, content types and CCK, and, you know, you cover views in 24 pages, and it's actually a pretty good overview of views. And you don't, one thing I was kind of happy to see was parts of views you just don't even mention, because in my opinion, once you mention like relationships, it's almost a rabbit's hole. You can't really talk about views, relationships, and a page and have people understand it.
No. So what I did is I gave enough information for my clients or folks that would represent my clients, you know, that kind of profile, to where, you know, they're always wanting, hey, I want to put this list of things up on my site. How do I do that? So I do, you know, kind of enough to get you to that point. And if you want to know more about views, here's a link to the online resources on Drupal.com for the additional stuff.
Right. Hey, have we mentioned the publisher yet? I don't think we have. It's A-Press Publishing.
Right.
And later on, as with, you know, all of our book author interviews, we're going to be giving away a couple copies of the book. And towards the end of the podcast, we'll tell you how you can register to win a copy if you're listening to the podcast. Yeah, I don't think we need to talk about the book too much longer. I mean, I think, you know, it's really geared towards beginners, and it's, you know, like you said, Todd, it really is something that you can hand a client, and it's almost one of those things where when you launch a site and give the client the walkthrough and talk about, here are your content types, their eyes might glaze over a little bit, but you can always say, hey, check out chapter 10 in the book for some background, and then look at your content types and let me know if you have any questions.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Well, fantastic. So I think, Ryan, for the second story, I think there's a new way to find out about Drupal news, right?
If you'll pardon the pun, this is something that only came on my radar this week.
Oh!
It's there's a new site out there. It's a Drupal news site, and it's called Drupal Radar. I believe it must be from Europe. I'm going to guess England because it's written in English, and they spell the word program with two M's and an E. So that's not how we do it over here in the States. Thank you, Mr. Webster. So they have rolled out on Twitter, and they're posting a lot of stories there. They have a lot of, I mean, it's very news-style content, more so than almost any other site I can think of. They're really a Drupal news site. We read it out on, you know, on the podcast here, but we don't sit down and write, like, there's a new thing coming out here. The next closest thing I could think of are, you know, the Drupal.org homepage and Dries' blog when he talks about some new large sites that launch on Drupal and stuff like that, but it's a new thing for the Drupal community, and I would say a welcome one.
Yeah, it's basically it's a lot of the same stuff you see on Drupal Planet, but it's handpicked, and it's a independent take on the news you see on Drupal Planet. So yeah, it looks great, and they said that they're going to launch Drupal Radar TV at DrupalCon Copenhagen, which should be very interesting. I don't know if that's going to be interviews or if they're going to record sessions or what's going to happen, but you know, it's definitely something to look forward to, I think. And yeah, I haven't been able to figure out who's, you know, the personalities behind it. You know, there's some names that I don't recognize. It says it's powered by Pilot Internet, which is a UK Drupal agency. So, you know, it's kind of one of those sites that, you know, definitely bookmark and, you know, maybe put it in your feed and, you know, see what happens. And, you know, let's hope for the best. It's something that, you know, I think the Drupal community is lacking. There's definitely a hole for, you know, independent reporting of Drupal events, at least in printed form, I should say. But,
Yeah, it's interesting. Their icon, when you look at it really, really small, it actually looks like some sort of like a little Pac-Man or something. But if you see it a bit larger, it's not. It's just a radar. But it almost looks like it needs a face.
Well, yeah, because the dot in the radar looks like Pac-Man's eye.
It does.
Or is it the Drupal dot?
Intentional. You know, we will just have to get the people from this site on the podcast and then find out what Absolutely. It all means. So actually, we brought up Drupal Radar, and it turns out that one of their stories was one of the best links we could find for our next story, which is the fact that The Examiner, or if you're ever watching a presentation by CHX, it's examiner.com, launches on Drupal 7. We love you, chicks, really. So yeah. This is a big deal. This is something that's been a long time coming, right?
Yeah, this is one of those sites that, you know, let's put it this way. When whitehouse.gov launched, that was huge for Drupal. Mainly because of how visible that site is. Examiner.com is huge in another way. It's, I believe, a top 100 website on the web. Meaning, you know, it's in the top 100 of most visited websites ever. You know, it's up there. You know, millions of page views a day. And if you're unsure or not familiar with examiner.com, see, now I have to say it. Like,
apparently, they are a top 500 site. Mike, just this is according to Alexa. Take that as you will.
Oh, see, I actually thought I read somewhere they were top 75, so I was...
Oh, it certainly could be.
Yeah, that's why I said top 100, because I wasn't
100%. Oh, it's 122 in the U.S. Maybe, you know what, is there a way that I can get Canada stats here? Because they're originally from Canada.
Let's say, if we say top 500, then we almost can't be wrong.
Well, yeah, according to Alexa, they're certainly top 500.
Yeah, and since we've never been wrong yet on the podcast, we have to keep our streak alive. We have to keep the perfect record going.
So that's really a testimony to Drupal 7 and that a site this big would take that leap forward and jump on the new platform before it's even released. So I think that shows you the all the things have been baked into Drupal 7, the good things, and here's a company that stepped up off the cliff, if you would have it, and took the leap of faith on Drupal 7.
Yeah, they stepped up huge. You know, they've hired a number of Drupal core contributors. So in their building of examiner.com, they've found bugs and found performance issues in the maturing Drupal 7 and have fixed them. So it's quite a thing to be able to say that when Drupal 7 is released, it's going to have a top 500 site that's already running it. I mean, that gives people a lot of confidence in, you know, using Drupal 7 almost from day one. And I say almost only because, you know, it's so highly dependent on which modules you need and whether or not they're ready.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's going to be a big difference between upgrading and just turning on a fresh site.
Yeah, and I think one of the things with this site is they actually make heavy use of MongoDB, which I'm not a DB guru, which is, you know, spectacularly hard to say for me, DB guru for some reason. But MongoDB, I believe, is just a file-based database. And please, Ryan or Todd, correct me if I say something silly here. It's a file-based database that is exceptionally fast and efficient. And I think I'll stop talking there.
The big benefit of something like Mongo, and it's almost wrong now to say NoSQL databases. It's just alternative data stores. You know, Google has a really popular one called Bigtable. They published, there's some sort of a paper published, and then Google made something based on that, and Amazon made something based on that, and now things like Mongo and Couch and Cassandra are now starting to emerge as these different ways of creating a database. So the basic idea is that the operating system is really, really good at handling files. So why don't we just take as much advantage of the operating system as we can, and we'll create one of these file-based databases. And most of them also come with the idea that instead of trying to enforce a schema on these documents, just store everything as, this is the key I want to store and this is the value I want to associate with it. And you normally will store things as a serialized object like JSON data or PHP serialized objects or something along those lines. And it ends up being pretty darn fast, and you index what you need to index, and then you just query what you need to query, and it ends up working out pretty well. But at the same time, you know, the traditional databases have also been doing their own upgrades, so it's not like using MySQL is the worst thing ever. It just happens that in this particular case, one of the big things that they need for the examiner is to, you know, share that data across dozens or hundreds of different servers. And that sharding of the information, one of the easiest ways to do that is with these newer non-traditional database systems. That was a really long answer.
No, that was great. That was great. You know, tying it back to our last story, you know, DrupalRadar.com, you know, covered this launch, and their article actually has a picture of the team, you know, right after launch. It looks like they're toasting, you know, with champagne and
Hey, I actually see Kevin in there, our friend Kevin, who used to live here in Florida.
Oh, there you go. And it sounds like that the actual switchover, and this is mainly from following Kevin's tweets, it sounds like the actual switchover was about a 20-plus hour affair, where, you know, a lot of the main developers were actually just in that room or available for those 20 hours doing the switch. And you know, it's up and it looks fantastic, and, you know, kudos to all those guys. It's, you know, just fantastic.
Well, and supposing that, you know, when I actually visit the site, if I'm seeing the new site, it's very seamless to me. As far as I remember, it looks pretty much the same, and I would never know the difference.
Yeah, well, that's probably one of their goals. So, next story, what do we got?
Ryan. The next story is actually something that I found by just looking on Twitter, I believe. It was someone posted about an update to his iPad application for updating his Drupal site. And he's got actually an iPhone pictured on the site. It's called Drupad, drupad.com. It's $4.99 in the Apple iTunes store. And it lets you do a lot of fun things like moderating your comments, moderating posts, updating comments, sharing links from your site to different social media, viewing your log entries, running cron, running backup and migrate, and a bunch of other fun stuff like that. So just sort of like your mobile Drupal dashboard. And if you are used to having to log into your Drupal site with your iPhone, maybe this will make things just a little bit better. And maybe, you know, if you decide it's worth $5, check it out. We would love to have a review. I don't really use, I have an iPod Touch here, and I don't really use it all that often. So for me, it's not something that I'm going to have a lot of time to play with, because it's not something that I carry with me every day.
Yeah, now that I see this, I think I probably will buy this, you know, as soon as we're done with the podcast, and play with it, and, you know, give a little review during our next podcast. This looks very cool.
Yeah, as far as I understand, you can set it up to administer multiple sites, and it has actually one thing that most Drupal sites do not, that when you're moderating comments, if someone has entered their email address along with the comment, it will go out to the Gravatar service and find their picture. So if I leave a comment on your site, I have signed up with Gravatar, and I have uploaded a photo of myself so that my picture shows up on any blog that takes advantage of that service. So it's kind of a neat thing, just throwing in there.
There you go. I like the fact that application access, as this quote, application access is protected by a secret code.
So dun, sounds, dun, dun.
That sounds awesome. I love secret codes.
The interface looks great. I was at a birthday party this afternoon and had a scheduled change I needed to implement on a website, and I'm using Safari and a magnifying glass trying to figure out where to log on. So when I saw this interface in the show notes, I thought, "Wow, I'm signing up." So looks great.
Yeah, and I see the in the screenshot the status report option. You know, where you can just click that and get a status report of your site. I mean, that alone might make it worth the $5.
And so one implementation detail, you do have to go out to Drupal.org and install a module on your site in order to make this work. It's called Drupad, funny enough. Mm-hmm. And the developer is there. He's got, you know, recent updates coming out not too many weeks ago. So check it out.
Fantastic. So for our last story of the week, this is actually written, well, it's an article that I saw by Boris Mann, but his article actually refers to another article by a designer by the name of Nathan Smith, and the title of the article is Why Drupal, and so this Nathan Smith seems like he has a lot of experience with a lot of various content management systems. And what he's saying in the article is he's comparing WordPress to a yacht and Drupal to an aircraft carrier. And what I like about this article is he's not slamming one to convince you to use the other, or there's nothing negative in this article. He's just talking about what makes each one great. And it's a great analogy, I thought, where he said, you know, WordPress is a yacht in that it is built for blogging and streamlined and works beautifully as a blogging tool. Where Drupal is an aircraft carrier that you can basically strap anything in the world you want to and it can go. As a blogging platform, it's nowhere near as sleek as WordPress. But where WordPress has the sleekness, it isn't as expandable. And it's, you know, a lot of times when you're talking about WordPress and Drupal, mudslinging can start pretty quickly in comparing them. And it's honestly, it's not a fair comparison. It's apples and oranges. And this is a very even-handed way to talk about the two of them.
Well, and Mike, I'm going to go ahead and just say something that I believe I say in every single one of our training sessions, is that WordPress, they give you a way to do everything, at least one. And Drupal doesn't try to give you any one way to do anything outside of things that ship with core. And most of the things that ship with core can be turned off and done another way.
Right. Yeah, and often that's, you know, that's the difficulty of Drupal. I'm sure Todd can speak to this as well, is there's often a multitude of ways to do a single thing, and that's one of the things that makes Drupal a little more challenging.
And more powerful. I was just sitting with a global transportation company last week talking to the CIO and some of their senior folks, and you know, they were asking the question, well, what, you know, I was talking to them about Drupal as an app, enterprise application framework that they could use to build departmental and enterprise applications on. So the question came up, well, what can't you do with Drupal? And thinking about what we just talked about, I was kind of dumbfounded. I sat there, I'm sure with a stupid look on my face, going, I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head that you could do with a standard traditional enterprise architecture framework. They're a big Java shop. So I couldn't really think of, you know, from an end user application standpoint, I couldn't think of anything you couldn't do. So I think that's, you're right, that's one of the struggles with Drupal, is that there's so many ways to do so many different things that for, especially for a newbie coming in, it's, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, and for people who listen to this podcast, you know, I love articles like this, because when you're talking to somebody who's not familiar with Drupal, but maybe they are familiar with WordPress, you know, being able to explain what Drupal is and how it compares in a manner that, you know, the person you're speaking to can understand is very important. And the more, you know, the more viewpoints you have about the two, the more of a coherent, you know, description you can give. So, you know, I think these articles are almost a must read, or these types of articles, you know, this one in particular I really like, but these types of articles are a must read for anybody who has to sit down with a client and talk about what Drupal is. You know, if you're looking to give your client, you know, any type of reassurance, this is a good way of going about it.
Exactly.
So, Mike, do we have any Drupal Easy and or road trip news coming up?
Yes, we do. I will actually be at Drupal Camp Connecticut coming up in about 2 weeks. I think, 2 weeks from the time we're recording this. So let me say the exact date. August 28th, it'll be at Yale University. So take that, design for Drupal at MIT. I take your MIT and I raise you a Yale.
Oh.
Anyway, so... last I checked, it wasn't sold out yet. There were maybe 40 more spots left, maybe 50, somewhere around there. The URL is drupalcampct.org. Drupal Easy is the sponsor, of course. And I will be presenting at least one panel, possibly more, or a session, I should say, possibly more. We'll see.
Mike, I got a question for you about this Drupal Camp.
Yes.
Is this Drupal Camp being run by a quote-unquote nonprofit organization?
No, this Drupal Camp is actually... Did you tee that one up for me nicely? That was on purpose. No, this is like several other recent Drupal Camps. This one has enlisted the help of the Drupal Association for to handle some of the financial aspects. And as the Drupal Association gets more comfortable, I'm sure that, or more comfortable doing this sort of thing, I'm sure more camps will be taking advantage of this. And it's kind of a great thing for the Drupal Association to be doing because, you know, Todd, I don't know if you've been involved in planning a Drupal camp. I know Ryan and I have. Often the financial aspect of, you know, who do you have the sponsors make the check out to is, you know, one of the first questions you get, and you kind of scratch your head and go, that's a good question. So the Drupal Association is helping out, and I assume everything's going to go smoothly. And I know that you know, we didn't prepare anything to talk about this, but I know that also Drupal Camp Atlanta is coming up. Ryan, do you know the dates of that by any chance?
September. You're going to this really quickly.
While you look it up, I'm going to move on to the next bit of Drupal Easy news. We have a new article out on using Drush in conjunction with SVN. And this is an article I wrote, and it basically stems from the fact that for the longest time, and I've been a Drush user for a while, and an SVN user for a while, and whenever I would do a module update, I would kind of use them separately, where I would delete the old module, commit the change, download the new module via Drush, add the files via SVN, and make the commit, all in separate steps. And I recently took, you know, the hour or so that it ended up taking me to figure out, well, I'm pretty sure that Drush has some SVN capabilities built in. How exactly does that work? And it turns out it's fantastic. So I wrote an article about it, and you can check that out on DrupalEasy.com. What do we got for Drupal Camp Atlanta? Anything?
It is coming up on October 2nd at the Georgia Tech University. Last year they had it just outside of town, and this year is in the middle of Atlanta, so it should be really cool.
Yeah, and from what I understand, they have an excellent facility there, and I believe that they're fully expecting it to sell out very quickly.
Yeah, it actually costs something this year. Last year it was free, and they had it limited to about 200 people, and it sold out pretty much instantly.
Yeah.
So that's a good lesson for people organizing Drupal Camp in a big city. Maybe charge it a few dollars. So I think it's $25 attend.
That sounds right. Any Drupal camps out on the West Coast, Todd, that we should know about coming up?
Well, my friends in the local Drupal user group are going to throw rocks at me my next time I show up. But there has been one in the planning stages, and I was just looking, and I can't find the date. So
that's Portland, correct? Drupal Camp Portland? Is that what it would be called?
Right, exactly.
Can you point us to groups.drupal.org for that?
Yes, it's groups.drupal.org/Portland.
Okay.
I love Drupal camps.
Just that easy.
I hope that everyone who's listening to this podcast has been to one. If not, you should get to one. I'm almost to the point where I enjoy Drupal camps as much as Drupal cons.
Yeah, definitely. You get the chance to be able to actually like shake hands with everyone.
It's not too overwhelming
situation.
Hey, let's talk about our sponsor, webenable.com.
We love these guys, and every so often, they also come up in other arenas. I actually just recently heard from, the top-notch themes people that they are now hosting a sample site for all of their top-notch themes. Like, their demo site is also hosted on Web-enabled. So that's a cool thing that they're using that, too.
Yeah, and, the one thing I wanted to mention today was their support. We've been using them for all of our clients as well as all of our training sessions for probably close to a year now. And every time we've had a problem, and it's usually been our fault, every time I've had a problem, I open a support ticket, and it's almost every single time it's a matter of hours. Later on in the morning or later on in the afternoon, I hear back from them. Usually we hop on chat or Skype or something and get it fixed, and I'm off and running again. Their support has been top notch, and definitely check them out. You can get a free account at Web-enabled to let you have, I believe, 3 applications. I hope that's right. 3 instances, I should say, or 3 applications, which means you can basically have 3 Drupal sites. You can start with OpenAtrium as a base, Acquia Drupal, Drupal Core, any one of a number of other Drupal products. I believe Managing News is one of them now. Did I say OpenAtrium? If not, I meant OpenAtrium. Definitely check them out, webenabled.com.
Awesome. And so we now are going to move on to our picks of the week. And I think, Mike, you're going to go first.
Yeah, mine, I'm actually pulling Orion this week.
Something that's not a module?
It's not. I think this is the first time I've picked something that's not a module. And I actually have 3 or 4 modules. I have them kind of in the queue where I said, oh, this could definitely be a pick of the week. But I found myself, this past week while I was writing this Drush article, referring to the site over and over. And I realized, wow, this is really a great resource. It's drush.ws. And it's basically, documentation and support for Drush. It's fantastic. It's a lot of times with Drush, you can always do Drush help and then the name of the command, but sometimes you don't know the name of the command. And if you do Drush help on the command line, everything kind of flies by quickly. And then you type in another command and maybe it disappears off the top of the buffer. And being able to go to drush.ws and do, you know, command F and be able to search for a command and have it up while in another window you're actually typing that command into the command line. It just makes it really handy. It's excellent documentation. I put the word out. I'm trying to figure out who actually put this site up and who's behind it. I don't know yet. If somebody knows, please by all means let me know so we can give them their due props.
Well, and a neat thing too is that they pull in all the discussions about Drush from GDO, and they also, if you mention #Drush on Twitter, it will pull in your tweets there. So it's sort of like a no maintenance version of a site. It just, they want to put the information out, and they just want it to be there.
Yeah, it's a good resource.
Definitely. So I'll be next, and I've just got a quick module for you this week. Actually, mentioning WordPress like we did before, this is a feature that's been in WordPress for as long as I can remember, which is anytime you create a new post or page in WordPress, you can choose to password protect it. And this came up with a client this week. They wanted to password protect something for sort of like a, you know, only for certain members, and we didn't want to go through the whole thing with node access and all this other stuff and setting up groups or setting up other things or whatever it was. She just said, can we just put a password, same password for everyone, on this page? I said, I'll find something. It's called Protected Node, and it does just that. It's very simple. And then you can also choose whether or not you want to show the title of the node, and that's about all it does. And it works.
So Tommy, so if you're using this and you're protecting two nodes, does the user have to...
Each one has its own password.
So
you enter it actually in the node editing form, the password, and you actually have to confirm it so that you don't get it wrong.
So this might be a good thing where, you know, maybe you've written something, but you want 10 people to check it out before you publish it, and they're not necessarily, you know, content administrators on their site.
That would be fine.
All right, and then so I assume that you can easily remove the password and make it public whenever you want?
Yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I haven't tried that yet, but I'm sure it works.
Fantastic. And Todd, I believe you have a pick of the week as well.
I do. I use CCK file field a lot on my client sites, and one of the common complaints I hear from clients is that I have to upload that file from my PC or my Mac every time I want to add it to a new node. Well, when I did some searching, and there's a great little module called File Field Sources. And what it does is it allows a content author to either upload a new file, so an image or another file, or it allows them to go out and browse the server if they know that that file already exists. It allows them to go out and browse the server, find that file, and attach it to that node. Or it also allows you to go out and enter a URL to an external source on the web to upload a file. So saves a lot of frustration on authors from having to re-upload a file that they've already uploaded in the past and reuse it.
Yeah, the neat thing about this too, Todd, is that it's pluggable. So you can actually write your own sources. Like I know there's like an IMCE version. I don't know if Asset Module does this because Asset is kind of like not, it's kind of deprecated now that people are really working on media for Drupal 7, but things like that, they just work with it. It's pretty neat.
It's awesome.
And this is one of those modules that it's immediately trustworthy because if you look at the author, it's QuickSketch, Nate Hoag. I can never pronounce his last name right. He's a lullabot. He's written a lot of fantastic modules, and he's just one of those guys that you see that he's the author of the module, and the module has instant credibility.
It's a great tool.
Fantastic.
So this week, we actually had one of our listeners sent in through our form, which is drupaleasy.com/site of the week, all one word, no underscores, no spaces, a website to us. It's called pricewatchdrop.co.uk. And basically what it does is to list products that someone has decided to watch and tell you whether or not they've become cheaper recently. And I believe it might use Amazon and other kinds of sites, very UK specific, but it lets you know, and there's some kind of fun aspects to it as well.
Yeah, we should mention it was actually submitted by John Carney. So thank you, John, for sending it in. And when he sent it in, he wrote thought I would send you over info of this site. It's built on Drupal 6 and use a whole bunch of contributed and custom modules. And he says in the background, there's a price comparison service. He doesn't mention which service, which makes note of the current price for each item. When a new lower price is detected, the node is added to the list of price drops and displayed on the site via views. So it looks like there's a custom module, you know, somewhere that is, you know, interfacing with this price comparison service. And if it looks like there's a new low price, it pulls it in and displays it. And it's, you know, it looks like it's a pretty clean site. And you know, it looks like it looks like one of those sites where it's not super complicated, but it probably does the job pretty darn well for what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Thanks for sending that in, John. And anybody else who's interested in getting their site mentioned here on the show, we'll take a look at it and maybe try to pick it apart every so often. You can send us through DrupalEasy.com. And we've actually had a lot of feedback from our audience this week. So do you want to talk about that a little bit, Mike?
Sure. You know, we actually had a couple couple of high-profile shout-outs from a previous interview that we did with Jacob Redding, who's a member of the Drupal Association. One of them from Heather James Acquia, who basically talked to us, not talked to us, but mentioned us talking about the interview and Jacob's book, Beginning Drupal, and how that can be a good first step for somebody learning Drupal. Gabor Hotsky, who I hope I'm pronouncing Gabor's last name correctly, he's been a long time Drupal core committer, and you know, he's been around since the very early days. But he actually also mentioned the podcast and that interview specifically with Jacob, talking about Jacob's work with the localization server, which allows many people to contribute translations kind of in an automated way. We're actually using that on a site right now, and it's very, very slick. So anybody who's doing multilingual sites that involve translation, if you're not using Spanish or another language where it's, you know, 95% translated already, the tools that Jacob talks about in the book and that we mentioned briefly in the podcast are just really, really powerful tools for collaborating to do these translations. And then I also want to thank the guys at Crimson. I'm actually back from Belgium. I'm back here in Florida and in the lovely heat and humidity. But the fine folks at Crimson in Antwerp kind of let me desk surf there for a few weeks, and they gave me a nice shout out in their blog. So thanks to them, and hopefully I'll see them soon.
Awesome. So did you guys get to share any of that awesome monastic beer the Trappists are cooking up in the back of the abbey for you?
No, I didn't drink beer with any of them. I actually, they do a really cool thing in their office where they don't go out for lunch. They actually bring lunch in every day, and they all sit together at lunch and just kind of talk, and it's kind of a cool thing. You know, being in the States and things here, usually when you're with people, you go out to lunch. But it seemed like that was kind of a thing that they don't really do, that they every day they just eat lunch in and sit around and talk, and it was, you know, it was actually quite nice, and you know, I appreciate them including me in that.
Well, sometimes it's just nice to have an office at all, like to be working alongside of other people.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because so they speak Flemish, or which is, you know, a dialect of Dutch. I can understand. I know enough to know when people are talking about me, so I guess I'm dangerous in that way. But it's kind of bizarre where I'm just sitting there doing my own thing, and they're all kind of collaborating on other projects, speaking in Flemish, but I can understand probably half the words because they're all like Drupal vocabulary words. You know, you'd hear a bunch of Dutch and then you'd hear CCK and then some more Dutch and then file field or node reference. And I'm like, wow, this is very, it's like two worlds of mine colliding in a very bizarre way, but it's kind of fun to be there.
Now, Mike, do they say Drupal differently there? I mean, does it sound most of the same?
Yeah, no, this, you know, it's. I think everyone's pretty much standardized on Drupal. I think the only people who I hear these days say Drupal are people who are new to Drupal.
Drupal.
Yeah.
Yep.
The one word I have heard pronounced probably 17 different ways is Acquia.
Oh yeah.
And I hope I hope I'm saying it correctly. I mean, for all I know, you know, us Americans, we could all be saying it incorrectly. But I've heard Acquia or Akia.
Oh man, yeah. It's funny. Like people who talk to us, a lot of times, you know, they've been trying to figure out how to get Drupal support or Drupal training or Drupal services. So Acquia has certainly come up because they've gotten magazine articles written about them or something along those lines. And yeah, we definitely get a lot of interesting pronunciations now.
That's fun. I think by now I'm able to at least recognize all the different pronunciations. So anyway, hey, should we mention the fact that Andrew's not here?
Well, you know, I would say that I have a very bad feeling about this, except for that it's happened over and over and over again. So I think he'll be fine. He's probably just been, you know, stolen by the whatever Minox or whatever it is that happened to be taking hold of him this week.
Yeah, he from what I understand, he had a very long work week. So hopefully next week is better for him. But if you want to hear more about his work week, you can follow him on Twitter.
Well, and in honor of Andrew, I've been trying to throw in as many Star Wars references as I can. just because.
Yeah, but you got to go to like an encyclopedia and pull out something that nobody understands from Star Wars.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was funny. I'll tell a very quick Star Wars story since it's very much on the front of my mind. In Orlando, these past 4 days has been the Star Wars celebration, which is, you know, like the big Star Wars convention of the year. Or actually, it's I think it's the first one in a couple of years. So I have, you know, two kids who are, you know, prime in these Star Wars, you know, just everything is about Star Wars for them. So we took the plunge and drove over to Orlando today to go to the Star Wars celebration. And a friend of ours came along with us who's kind of like a pop culture whiz. He's the guy who you want like on your team when you go to like trivia night at the bar, especially if it's talking about like 80s TV shows. He just like constantly amazes us with his knowledge. So my 9-year-old son decides to challenge him and says, you know, hey, why don't you give me some, you know, questions about Star Wars that, you know, and see if I can answer them. And so the first question, you know, out of my buddy's mouth is, name three bounty hunters in Star Wars. So, you know, I can name one off the top of my head, and that's Boba Fett, right? I mean, can either of you guys name another one?
In fact, yes.
Oh, but see, Andrew's going to be very happy now.
One I know would be IG-88, who's a robot.
Wow.
I guess technically he would be a droid, right?
Wow.
One would be Princess Leia's alter ego. And apparently that bounty hunter's name is Boosh. So there you go. There's my two.
Are you making those up?
Oh, no. But actually, it's my brother is the big Star Wars nerd.
Did I see him today? Or did I walk by him and not recognize him because he was in, you know, a stormtrooper outfit or something today?
Could be. You never know.
So, all right, well, there you go. There's my Star Wars story. I thought it would have I thought it was going to have one ending, but the ending you just gave it, Ryan, is a much better ending to the story, so I'm going to leave it at that. The fact that you knew more bounty hunters than I had even ever heard of, you know, that's amazing. Needless to say, my son rattled off three that, you know, and, you know, my buddy sitting next to me in the car was just like dumbfounded and said, okay, well, I submit to your Star Wars greatness. All right, well, hopefully we've made Andrew happy now.
Yes. Hopefully. So, Mike, do we have some bookaways this week?
We do. This podcast is not going to end, is it?
No.
Yeah, so we do. I picked three winners of Jacob Redding's Beginning Drupal book from Rocks Publishing. And, you know, just as my luck, usually we try and – I was just telling Todd this before we started the podcast today. I actually prefer it when the publishers don't send me the books. That way I don't have to make an extra trip to the post office. And I can just send the publisher the names and addresses and they send them directly. In this case, the publisher was kind enough to send me, you know, three copies for, well, they sent me five copies and I have one. And I think, Ryan, you have one as well. So we're giving three away. And they're sitting here on my desk next to me. So I go yesterday to pick the three winners. And, of course, the three winners could not be scattered farther across the globe than the three that I picked. And, of course, I use random.org, as usual. But congratulations to Igor Santos from Gabon, or Gabon. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But I did look it up, and it is in West Central Africa. So that book will be in the mail. Actually, as soon as I hear from Igor, I have not heard back from him yet. Also, congratulations to Mario Hernandez from California. His book will definitely be in the mail tomorrow. And the third book will be going to Daryl Branson from Australia. And I actually got a cool email from Daryl earlier today saying, and I hope this story is true, because if it's not true, then he's just blowing smoke and I'm not going to send him the book, but I'm going to take him the, I'm going to take his word for it. He actually wrote, "So I'm in the car traveling 6 hours to get back home from a family event. I'm listening to the Drupal Easy podcast, the episode The Outbreak Monkey, which is probably, what, 4 or 5 episodes ago? I take out the laptop and 3G broadband while my wife is driving, and I get a Twitter message from you guys saying I've won the beginning Drupal book. How cool." So he actually had an entire Drupal Easy car ride, you know, a Drupal Easy car ride. He goes on to say he works in education and has used Drupal for a number of school sites. He doesn't use Drupal every day. He loves the community aspect of the project and wants to spend more time developing with it. He actually credits our show for his purchase of Front End Drupal by Emma Jane, which is, you know, I think we've said several times, that's one of our favorite Drupal books. So he says, "Thanks, love listening to the show." So Daryl, thank you, and, you know, your book will begin its long journey sometime tomorrow.
So Mike, we also have a couple copies of Todd's book to give away too, right?
Yes, and this is, I don't actually have these copies of the book in my hand. This is one where the publisher still has them. So I'm hoping A-Press will send them wherever our listeners are. But if you would like to register to win a copy of Beginning Drupal 7, as always, just leave a comment on DrupalEasy.com on this podcast. You know, tell us why you want the book, or just, you know, leave something witty. And as always, we will pick a couple random winners, and, you know, they'll get a, I don't know, what does this book retail for, Todd? $40, $45, something like that?
$41.99, I think.
$41.99, so that's not a bad deal. And I think by now we've probably given away close to $1,000 worth of books. I'm just looking at my bookshelf on the number of books that we've, you know, where we've talked to the authors, and it's probably 10 or 15 books, 2 books each. So hopefully we're helping a lot of people get a little bit of a kickstart with Drupal.
Awesome stuff. So if you want to find us out there on the internet, you can find us at Drupal Easy on Twitter. And we also have a friend feed room where we take all of our links from the week. And they go into friend feed if you're ever interested in following us and find out maybe some things that we are linking to that we haven't talked about in the podcast or things that are coming up. You can follow Mike. He is Ultimike. Myself, I'm Liberator with the Web 2.0 spelling. And then our guest, Todd Tomlinson, just like it sounds, Todd with 2 D's, Tomlinson. And of course, his professional site is serverlogic.com. Anything else you want to add there, Todd?
No, that's it, guys. Thank you.
We can't wait to talk to you again when we have pro Drupal development in our hot little hands.
It's coming out soon.
Looking forward to it.
Very, very cool. And as always, we would love if you were to find us in the iTunes directory, Google Listen, Miro podcast directory, or your other favorite podcatcher, and give us a rating, a review, or a comment there so that other people know when they come across the show that you are a listener and what you get out of it. So thanks to everyone for listening, We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
See ya.